This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest, Victor Avakian of Fresno, California. He will turn 100 the day before Veterans Day. He's a lifelong mechanic, and some of his friends know him as T-Bird because he's a longtime Ford Thunderbird enthusiast. During World War II, he served as a mechanic with the 679th Medical Collecting Company. When he wasn't fixing the company's vehicles or putting them together, as we'll hear, he spent some of his time comforting wounded soldiers that the company was helping to care for.
I could talk to some of the guys. I didn't do any physical work on them because I wasn't qualified for that. They had men that would take care of that, and then from there, they put them on a hospital ship.
But you said you could talk to the guys. So you would go in these medical tents and talk to the wounded soldiers?
Yeah, I could. I never went to the big hospitals. It was just the little places they had in different spots, in other words, see how they're doing. But they didn't stay there very long. They moved them out real fast.
What kind of stuff would you talk about with them?
Where they were from, what they did and all. But some of them were hurt so bad they didn't want to talk. Some were minor wounds, in other words, not real major wounds. Injuries even coming ashore. They'd get injured sometimes, too.
But you just thought if they didn't have you doing anything else, you could go provide some encouragement or something to them?
After they got settled, then I'd start checking vehicles and all. But we never stayed in a place that long. And if a vehicle didn't work, they just abandoned it, let it go. Let someone else worry about it. It isn't organized like you think on TV. It's pandemonium, you understand?
How did you figure out what to do?
Well, a lot of the stuff was basic. So I knew what to do to get it to go, that's all. I didn't worry about how good it ran. It would run, that's all I was interested in. You didn't worry about that.
And what about just that day-to-day existence there for a month? I mean, when you're sleeping at night, are you worried about the enemy coming over and bombing? Are you worried about artillery coming in?
Naturally, yeah, you worry about, think about that, yeah. Because we're close to the front lines. I'm not 10 miles behind it, you understand? And we're always moving with the infantry. And the infantry is the main line, in other words.
So you guys were right in behind them so you could
right
be the...
Right in behind them. We lived in the dirt just like they did. We didn't live in nice tents and all and everything because we were constantly moving.
What was the most difficult thing for you to deal with?
Just surviving, that's all. I wonder what tomorrow's going to bring, in other words.
Were you scared?
Yes and no. When you're young like that, you don't think about stuff like that too much. I was only 23 years old.
Were there other mechanics in the outfit?
No, I was the only one. I had a helper. Our company, full strength, was 130 people. We had 8 or 9 vehicles to take care of, though.
And those are all like Jeeps or ambulances or what?
Yeah, ambulances and Jeeps, yeah. A couple of weapons carriers.
So who did you spend most of your time with?
Who could I spend it with? Guys like me, because all the officers were doctors. We had 3 doctors, I think. Well, they wouldn't fraternize too much with us, in other words. They were amongst themselves. They would even eat amongst themselves.
How was the food?
First class. When we hit the main island, things got settled pretty good. Well, we were there till the war ended. We talk about food. You get in line to eat. Little kids in the Philippines, they had a gallon can, empty can with a wire handle. They were so hungry, they wait for your leftovers. And a lot of times we'd look at it, didn't look that good, I'd give it all to them. They put it in the can, they'd run home with it. They were very hungry and all.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, we think of it from an American lens and there's this war to win. There are tyrannical regimes to be defeated. But you saw in 2 different main islands in the Philippines, a country whose freedom had been taken and a life that I'm sure was pretty different from an American life.
Well, completely different world, completely. This country has no imagination of what it's like.
Well, help us understand, what were some of the things that you saw that underscored for you why you were there and what it was you guys were doing there?
Well, we had to get the Japanese, lick the Japanese, get them off the island any way you can. Our company was assigned to take some prisoners off of Corregidor Island. We were in on that, too, taking the wounded and the ones that were prisoners of war off Corregidor Island and taking them to hospital ships and all.
So this, you know, Corregidor had fallen right at the beginning of the war.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys ended up on the Bataan Death March.
Right.
So you're saying later in the war, as America recaptures that area, your company processed some of those emaciated and tortured prisoners?
Yeah. Evacuated them to take them to a hospital ship, in other words.
So you saw these guys?
Yeah, I saw them. They were terrible shape physically because they were starved to death, you know.
Had you ever seen anything like that before?
No, that was a new experience.
So how did that make you feel, to see human beings in that kind of condition?
I can't believe it. How lucky you were not to be involved in that, actually.
Did it make you angry at all?
It doesn't make you angry. It just makes you think that how could people do this to each other, that's all.
I mean, I imagine some of those people didn't have too much longer to live if you guys didn't get there.
They never make it. Yeah, maybe some of them even didn't make it even after you got home. We don't know in the shape they were in. They were just alive, in other words. It's a terrible thing to see. You just put up with it the best you can. You're trying to erase a lot of things out of your mind. You don't want to think about everything. It was miserable.
I've heard a lot of stories about disease in that part of the world at that time. A lot of GIs dealt with malaria or other things like that. Did you see or experience any of that?
Well, I got just about everything a guy could get except a venereal disease. I had yellow jaundice, dengue fever, jungle rot, hepatitis, and two other things I've forgotten, and malaria three times.
Is that all?
That's all. I'm amazed that I'm still here.
Maybe that's why you're still here. Maybe you just got immune to everything.
I got pickled. Yeah, I'm amazed at that. I think of that. I drew everything. I didn't miss nothing except venereal disease. They had stuff there they couldn't cure.
And I have to follow up because, you know, you hadn't volunteered any of that information about these diseases you got. And then when I asked you, you said you pretty much got everything that was possible to get. But you said it like it was no big deal. I imagine at the time it didn't feel like no big deal.
Well, as I say, when you're young, you don't worry too much about stuff like that. Well, as you get older, it takes its toll.
What was the worst of those?
Malaria is the worst thing to get. It's terrible.
And you got it three times?
Three times.
So what is that like? Tell me what the symptoms are or what you experience.
You're either freezing or you're burning up. Sometimes it goes on for a week, sometimes for two. The last time I was in the hospital 2 weeks, the last time, it was terrible. I didn't think I was going to make it the last time.
Well, I was imagining it's got to be a pretty helpless feeling because you don't know when it's going to end and what can you do about it.
That's right. You just lay there. You're either freezing in real hot weather, you're freezing, or just the opposite. When it's real cold outside, you want to take all your clothes off. You're burning up inside.
So when you're in the hospital for 2 weeks with malaria, and as you just said, you're not sure you're going to make it, what are you thinking about? What are you doing with your time there?
You lay there and just nothing. You just lay there and don't know what to think about.
Do you daydream about coming back home and seeing your family again?
Oh, yeah, you think about that, but you're just thinking about surviving. How long is this going to take, in other words?
I don't want to get too far off course here, but just to kind of frame this up or put it in perspective, what do you think the closest an enemy bullet or artillery shell or anything ever came to you was?
Well, when we landed on Subic Bay on the main island, at night, somebody'd holler, "Japs!" All of a sudden, guys are shooting at stuff they don't know what the hell they're shooting at. It's dark, any noise or anything. They start shooting. You wonder, I hope I don't get hit here. They're laying flat on the dirt, in other words. When's this going to end, you understand? Some smart guy says something like that. "Hey, there's Japs!" You know, everybody starts shooting. "What are you shooting at?" In other words, it's dark.
So bullet-wise, the most danger you were in was from your own guys?
Yeah, from our own guys sometimes, yeah.
But it sounds like for you personally, and all the time you spent over there, you had a bigger enemy than the Japanese, and that was these diseases.
That's right, yeah. After the island was taken, there's still segments of different places. There's Japanese that had to be cleaned out, you understand? Even though they've given up most of it, but then they're still isolated. They're guys that will fight till the end, in other words. Even if it's one or two guys, you got to get them out of there.
And I mentioned, you know, daydreaming about coming back and seeing your family again. Did you ever get letters from home while you were over there?
Oh, yeah. The quickest way, I always write a letter on a card. "Dear folks, I'm fine. Don't worry about me." That was the end of it. I said, what am I going to possibly tell them about what I'm doing here? And it changes from hour to hour anyway. You understand?
So you never told him you had malaria or anything?
No, I didn't tell him that. There's no point to it.
Did you ever wonder if you were going to make it home again?
Yeah, I would think about that. Not from bullets so much, just the diseases.
Right. Did you lose a lot of weight?
Oh, yeah. I was down to 130 pounds, I think. I couldn't keep nothing down either when you got malaria.
We talked about you being a mechanic with this medical collection company.
Yeah.
A couple things that come to mind. Maybe I'll start here. Do you have a sense of what your company accomplished, those 130 guys that you were with?
Our biggest problem is guys stealing the vehicles. They had shows at night. They go to a movie or something. Come out and your vehicle's gone. All the equipment overseas, the keys are all jammed in the ignition. There's nobody to say, where's the keys? Every car had the key jammed into it. You couldn't pull it out. You had to find it a certain way. Once you put it in, you couldn't pull it out no more. So every vehicle was ready to go. The Navy would steal them and take them aboard. And when they got to the next pier, the officers would use them. They'd unload them. They'd round all the time. When they're all through, they just leave it. They steal another one. I put three Jeeps together because they were gone. I had to put them together. They come in a big crate. Took you all day to put one together. It was all knocked down and put it in a special way it was laid up, but you had to assemble it. I put three of them together. They'd steal them right off from under you. So finally, we got wise. We take the coil wires out of them when we go to a movie, pull a coil wire and put it in your pocket, so even if you want to crank it, it won't start. You understand?
So you had to sabotage your own Jeeps to keep them from getting stolen.
Right. So we get a ride home again.
Well, it's funny, as you mentioned that, I'm thinking about all the guys I've talked to over the years who have told me stories about how they borrowed a Jeep from someone, and maybe it was yours that they borrowed for a while and never returned.
Well, then you got to get another one, and you don't get it the next day. You have to go to the ordnance company that handled all that. You didn't get it the next day to replace it. The Jeeps were the biggest ones they'd steal.
Was it hard to put one of those Jeeps together?
Well, it took time. In other words, the way it was laid out in a crate, it was a big flat crate they put it in. But the way they had disassembled a lot of stuff, you had to put together to get it to go again.
And did they have like a schematic telling you how it went together?
No, it's very basic. You could see the parts later, you know where it's supposed to go. But it's all strapped in different places and all. It's just a flat pancake when you get it.
So your experience was pretty unique. I mean, it sounds like you went through a lot of things you didn't expect to deal with.
That's right, yeah.
This is why I love meeting guys like you, because you never know what you're going to hear.
I'll tell you another story. They didn't have latrines. They dug trenches, and on one side the bank of dirt and the roll of toilet paper sitting there, and it's raining. What good is that? You understand? I'll never forget this. This guy had coveralls on like me. He did his job and he put his pants on, and he had crapped on his neck of his shirt and he had put it against his head. I heard every cuss word in the world. I heard some new ones I had never heard. He went crazy and no place to wash up. You understand? He had done it to himself. He just went crazy. I thought he was going to have a nervous breakdown. And no place to clean himself up. And in New Guinea, when we first went, we had sleeping bags. We put them right on the dirt. You didn't have cots or nothing. And they had a lot of bugs and stuff. When it's warm in there, they come in, the guys with them. They go crazy, big bugs. One guy had a little gopher snake or something. He threw at another guy, and the guy got so mad and scared. Well, everybody had rifles. We were a medical unit, but all the medics had rifles. He stuck the rifle right to the guy's gut. He's shaking. He said, I'll kill you. You do that to me, he said, I'll kill you. He's shaking. Is that bad? I'll never forget that. Boy, that was scary. He's shaking while he's talking to him. He got the gun right to his gut. He couldn't miss. I'll kill you, he said. Don't you ever do that again. As I say, I met every kind of an animal in the world. Every kind. From one extreme to the other, in other words.
With all the insanity that you witnessed, I'm sure there were some examples of people you really admired as well.
Yeah, there were some real good guys, too. North and South Dakota, Minnesota and Iowa. That group was a different mindset of people. You could tell by their dog tags or where they were inducted from. I still got my dog tags. I saved them.
And you can see a photo of those dog tags or even a video of Victor Avakian with those dog tags at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also find some information about his late cousin Luther, one of the more than 400,000 Americans who never got to come home from World War II. We'll hear that story when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.